I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul. Hello, I'm delighted today to be able to speak to John Rozier, ex-fund manager, professional investor, and author of John's Investment Chronicles. So welcome, John.
Welcome. Thank you very much. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, well, I don't know why I'm smiling, actually, because it's been a pretty brutal last 3 days. In fact, I think the FTSE's down another 5% today. But we've always got to run through your view of the markets going forward and what that means for investors. And I suppose you just quickly remind everyone what kind of stocks you like, what kind of investor you are.
Okay. So I run two portfolios. One portfolio is just invest in funds. So that's much more global. So I've got exposure to Far East and I had a lot of exposure to US, but that was cut back in January. But the main portfolio, which I've sort of been chronicling since January 2012, is pretty much UK based. I tend to be mid and small cap, which has been pretty difficult over the last, 4 or 5 years. And I would describe myself as, GARV. How about...
What's GARV?
Growth at the right valuation.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's growth at the right price, isn't it? Price and valuation. Having said that, I do have a bit more of a sort of value bent to what I do. So in other words, I struggle when a stock might be on 25 times and someone says, but look at the growth. So the growth, 25 times is fine. That's growth at the right valuation. You see, I don't think that is, or maybe it is, but for me, I feel much more comfortable with stocks that are generally in the mid-teens PE, 12 to 18 times, maybe something like that, where I see the potential for the PE to expand. So in other words, good news to come through and maybe people then to appreciate it more and the PE to move up from 10 to 15 to 16. And if you get also with that earnings growth upgrades, then, that's your double whammy, sort of earnings growth, the earnings growing quickly and a revaluation. I mean, occasionally I call stocks, they get the bonkers monitor, bonkers cheap. And it doesn't happen often, but for me, the bonkers cheap ones are when you get something where the dividend yield and is more than the PE. PayPoint 2 years ago, 18 months ago. I think it was on a PE of about 7.5 and the yield was 7.7. Now that's up sort of, we'll have a look today, but it's up about 30-40%. And I've had the dividend as well. So occasionally you get these bonkers cheap things to stop.
Well, you're a man to my own heart. I mean, that's the kind of sort of investment philosophy that I do. But one thing I've really struggled, I'd really appreciate, and I'm sure other investors would, your thoughts. How do you distinguish between a lowly rated stock? Is it a value play or is it a value trap? How do you distinguish between the two? Because I get caught in too many value traps.
Well, I've had some value. Look, It's all very easy, isn't it, when you're talking a thing like this, to think, yeah, I always get it right. Well, of course you don't. I mean, if you so I've had value traps as well, where maybe the dividend or whatever and the yield has attracted me, and actually the earnings growth just hasn't come through. And in those cases, then you have to move on. But I mean, there's one stock for me. I mean, I held Polar Capital Holdings, which clearly is under pressure again in the last week, because, you know, it's a fund manager. It runs the Polar Capital Technology Trust, which obviously won't be doing very well at the moment, and various other, you know, funds. And so that stock's being hit because the markets are down, but it yields now, must be about 11%. My guess is that dividend will not be cut. And I've held this for now probably 3 or 4 years. And although I've made no return on the capital front, my total return on the position is up about, well, even after today's fall, sadly, it's now down 0.2%. But I expect to get the dividend coming through, and I'll just keep compounding that. And hopefully, you know, when markets recover, this will recover very quickly. Eventually, you know, I'll make a very good return out of it.
Just on Polar Capital,
I think this is a value trap because of the strength of the balance sheet. And I think a really excellent management team who know how to build a fund management business.
Just on Polar Capital, Isn't quite a big chunk of their earnings dependent on performance fees? And obviously, with the markets going down, that's going to be pretty difficult.
Yeah, you're right to point that out. You know, performance fees, but there's been times, you know, before where the performance fees haven't come through, etc. Where, you know, where we've had a fall in the markets, but. Ultimately, if you strip out the performance fees, I think you've got a good base of earnings there and a very good balance sheet as well, which is why I think the dividend is safe there.
Yeah. How dependent is its earnings on the Mag 7 and also Asia?
The Mag 7's an interest, but I mean, Polar Capital Technology Trust, I mean, I held that in the funds portfolio, and I sold it as, you know, subscribers to my service know, I sold it on the day on Deep Seat Monday back in January.
Oh, well,
and I think I actually put, if you're going to panic fast. And in that case, I did. And I sold Polar Capital Technology, and I sold my I had an ETF that invested in semiconductors. And I sold both of those that day. Now, for them, yeah, I mean, you know, Polar Capital Technology, they obviously got a big exposure to the US. And that's why the trust is off 30-odd% in the last couple of months. And that will hit their, you know, their income from, you know, their fee income. But, you know, there's other areas that will go against it. But look, there's no getting away from it. Their earnings will be hit, and I think this week we'll get an update from them.
Well, you're in good company. I know the Harwood boys are big into Polar Capital. So just taking a step back, obviously you're a value stroke Garv investor, and which is close to my heart. How has the portfolio performed over the, well, since you started, but also sort of particularly over the last 5 years, sort of just before pre-pandemic to now?
Okay, so since January 2012, the compound to the end of March was 11.2% per annum.
Well done.
And I was sort of looking at that the other day. Because, yeah, you see, but I don't feel very clever because it used to be 14. And you sort of asked up until, you know, 5 years ago, and it was compounding at sort of 14. And the last few years have not been very easy. Yeah. And I think, you know, the main problem is I've had my exposure to the UK small and mid cap, which I don't have to do. I could buy other things, but I have sort of stuck with this area, hoping it will come right. I think it will do at some stage. I mean, because I think capital will flow to what are, compared to other international markets, very cheap stocks. And actually, they're slowly disappearing as well, because private equity, etc., are looking at these companies and buying them. But to go back, 5 years ago, I launched the funds portfolio. And that's basically my wife's SIP. So, you know, I mirror it. And that's done much better than the main portfolio, yeah, because it has had overseas exposure and not been reliant on UK small cap.
Right.
So yes, it's dragged down my performance over the last 4 or 5 years.
And have you changed your investment approach at all over that, given the, you've adjusted, or you've just stuck straight to the, you know, your core GARV stroke, you know, small caps in your main portfolio? Have you changed how you do it or how you treat it?
I've not changed the approach, but I have been using stop losses a bit more. Because I did recognize that what, you know, one of my weaknesses was hanging on to losers too long. So this is the thing. I've been doing this 40 years and you still learn new stuff. If you think you know it all, then you... I have introduced stop losses. So one of the stocks that I bought a month or so ago was WH Smith. And that disappeared from the portfolio the other day.
Well done.
I'd only put 1% in it to start with. It dropped 20%. It's out. And I can sort of see why it's falling. You know, if the US does drop into recession, which I guess people are starting to forecast, and it sort of looks certainly a major risk that it will. And you're seeing all sorts of indicators in terms of travel. And the US is a major part of its business now. Especially in the, you know, in the travel format, in the airports, etc.
Hasn't it just sold its UK high street business to?
It did, and I think that's a good move, frankly, because it was. I don't think it helped its valuation. It's not a long term growth area for it. So they did. I think the market was a bit disappointed with what they got for it. I think it was about a net 25 million, which, but I mean, it was almost paying someone to take it away. I think in the long term, that's good, because they can just focus on the faster growing part of its business, which is travel, where I think it's a great business. But, you know, at the moment, sentiment will be taking a hit if there's concerns about, you know, about consumer in the US particularly.
Mm. Yeah,
I'm out of that. I'll keep an eye on it, and maybe
I see the PE on that one is 9.3% of today, and a dividend yield of 4%. Just coming back to the use of stop losses, in this type of market, one of the reasons why we're selling hard so sharply over the last 3 days is you've got a lot of distressed sellers, hedge funds who have been asked for, you know, to lodge collateral and prime brokerages. But even in the small and mid-sides, etc., you're getting a lot of investors who are on margin, likewise distressed selling. And also you're getting a lot of private investors whose stop losses are being triggered by an artificial dive. So how do you adjust your stop losses strategy in today's market? Because you can just get sold out of a really good company like Polar Capital.
Yeah,
just because somebody else is selling and distress, just dumping on the market.
Yeah, well, with Polar Capital, I haven't got a stop loss in on that. So, you know, I haven't introduced stop losses for every single one of my things. And this is something that's fairly new for me. So what I've tended to do is introduce the stop losses on new positions.
Okay.
So, you know, so I'll be brutally honest with you. I read Justin Waite's.
Yes, Waite's.
Book, which I thought was excellent, actually, in terms of, you know, just making me think about stop losses and that side of things. And so to some extent, I'm experimenting with it, but I have introduced it on all new companies. Mm. So all new companies where I might have a 1 or 2% position to start with, I put that 20% stop loss in. Now, if it gets taken out, even in a route like this, I tend to want to stay fully invested because I don't know. I mean, I'd put a couple of pennies on the US market being awful this afternoon.
It's down,
I've put a lot of money on it being awful this afternoon, but I put a couple of pennies on it, perhaps... ending the day in the blue.
It's only 3% down indicated futures compared to down 5%.
Maybe that'll build or whatever, but we're in such an unpredictable situation now. And what you are starting to see is even supporters of Trump starting to get a bit wobbly.
Yeah.
I see Bill Ackman of Pershing Square sort of saying, how about a 90-day break on this and all sorts of stuff. There will be a stage where the pain, even for Donald Trump, who is sort of saying, oh, I'm not looking at my 401k, etc., he will be worried. And he'll declare victory. It's very simple. You know, we know what he's like. Yeah, well, I've got everyone thinking about it, you know, and people are ringing me up and whatever. So how do you think
it'll all play out? This, just coming back to the first question, which was the markets. How do you think it'll all play out? Because I'm with you. This is the art of the deal. It's the game. He's gamifying each individual country. He's trying to pick them off individually. Leave a few isolated countries who have been retaliatory traffickers like China, and he wants to sell basically soya beans and his oil and his LNG and maybe a few cars to all countries who has trade deficits with. And you're right, he's going to put out the victory flag as soon as
there's two victory flags for him. The first is all these different countries have cut their tariffs, etc., so what a great thing. I mean, I think the 10% baseline tariff will stay there, that's a given, but he can declare. And the other thing he'll declare success on is investment coming into the US. I mean, it's fairly small, but I listened to JCB last week on the radio talking about doubling the size of the plant. I think it's in Texas, but certainly in the US, and supplying all of the US from there. So Trump will point to the success in new investment in the US. So he'll declare victory. Now, I think that will be good for the markets, not just the US, but all markets. In the short term, I think longer term, though, I think the US has rather shot itself in the foot, because I wonder who the marginal buyers will be of the US. They're a big part of the world indices. Money's been flowing in there for 15 years or so. US exceptionalism. And I just wonder who where the capital is now going to start flowing to other areas. So I'm not in a rush to add to my US.
Yeah.
But I think other markets will bounce back.
Yeah.
But I think we're in for who knows? It's very unpredictable. US recession will not be good. But I just think the best way of playing this, if you try and call the markets, it's a mug's game, and you end up, I remember the COVID drop. Which I stayed pretty fully invested, and it all worked out fine. I know a lot of people who sold, and once you sell, it's bloody difficult to get back in, because it bounces and you think, oh dear, well, I'll just wait till it drops again, and then it doesn't drop again and it bounces more, and it just psychologically is very difficult. I think you've just got to play the long game, keep collecting your dividends, keep it in the market, reinvest it, and compound.
We're pretty close, actually, us two. We have the same sort of views, having been in the markets, investing for 25 years or 40 years in your case. And the optimist in me believes this is a man-made problem and we'll get a man-made solution. And it'll just be rocky for the next month or so.
And the other thing is, you can speculate, and at the end of the day, this is all speculation on what's going to happen. But I mean, will goods from the Far East divert itself to the UK a bit? Probably. Will we start to get fears of deflation, or certainly disinflation, in the UK? Will that mean interest rates come down quicker and faster? Probably, or possibly. And so all these sort of things, whereas we can tend to be very focused on looking at a screen and going, what's happening now? What's happening today? And it's like when you're buying if you're going to put some money in, I mean, I've got a little bit of money in the funds. I'm probably going to be looking to go 100% invested from my 94% at the moment. But I'll be looking to put that in. But when I put it in, I'll be looking at it saying, where do I think this will be in a year's time? Because if I try and think where will it be in a couple of days' time, I mean, I don't know, and maybe lower.
Yeah. So, no, you're right. I mean, the market, the macro and the market's changed so much, and it's a lot at the moment, it's distressed selling, and you will get a, you will at some point see that snap back once that distressed selling stops. But you're right with interest rates. I think the US for February had a relatively hot CPI last month when it was published in March. It was slightly higher. And they were basically indicating two interest rate cuts late in the year. Now they're now as of this morning, they're indicating five Fed interest rate cuts for this year.
Yes. And you know, and when Trump rolls back or something, that'll move again. So at the moment, there's a lot of noise. But I mean, I sold one stock this morning because since this all started, and I can't tell you which it is.
Why not?
What?
Why not? Because give us a clue.
All medium stock, and I don't want.
Okay, yeah, fine.
But I sold a stock to him because basically it was just down 2% in the last week, so it's held up 2%. Very well.
Okay.
And I just thought, and I've got a decent profit on it. It's not one of my highest conviction ideas, so I've sold that. That's given me another 3.4% of cash. I will redeploy that into some of my stocks that I think have been completely oversold, and may even introduce one new stock, which I've been watching for a bit, and that's been clobbered as well.
Yeah, that's a good strategy, upgrading the quality of your portfolio when you can. No, on downgrades. Yeah.
I hope so, anyway. I hope the quality goes up.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I like that strategy. Okay, just if anybody wants to ask John any questions, please put them into the chat bot and I'll read them out. Let's start with one particular stock I know you own. Really deep value in oil and gas. And obviously the oil price has been hit. Two things it's been hit by. First of all, obviously, fears over recession and demand weakening, but also a jump in supply coming from OPEC last week, probably getting ahead of them, you know, the Arabian countries wanting to retain market share ahead of Trump and having negotiation that people are going to have to take his oil. But anyway, let's move to Serica Energy, which is a North Sea oil and gas producer. It basically takes old fields and depleted ones and basically pushes out a lot of, you know, the oil and gas from the North Sea. Had a lot of maintenance issues. What's your latest thoughts on this one? Very, very cheap. Okay.
All right. Well, historically, so I bought this a long time ago, and I still got my total profit on it, even after the fall, is 120% at the moment.
Oh, well done.
So I bought this way back. So my first purchase was back in April 18. And we were at 70p. My big mistake was not selling it all when it was at about £4 when after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. I've traded around the edges over the time, but I mean, anyway, we are where we are. So since it was £4, I've just sat there collecting very big dividends. And we've got
a 12% dividend yield today.
Well, yeah, I mean, they've reduced the dividend compared to last year, final, but they're paying 10p. It goes X on the 26th of June, 10p, which on a 118 share price isn't bad just for the final dividend, let alone the other. So they did a great deal buying the assets off BP. The BKR field. So then did another good deal buying Tailwind, which is another North Sea producer, which had a lot of tax losses attached to it. But, you know, they've been hit over the last few years, obviously, by the gas price coming down from those peaks of two and a half years ago. But I think it still looks very good value, but what we really need for it to change is and to be seen as, or for the share price to really rally, is you do need to see some sort of change of heart from the government. Now, I don't think that's impossible. And there's already talks about having a more sensible wealth tax regime after the current sort of energy profits levy runs its course. One that's, I think, more predictable. So that's important. The other is that the government starts making sure that the courts don't get involved in stopping new developments. And we've seen movement on that recently in the North Sea. And as we're seeing, you know, with the cars today, I think, where they're changing the sort of the law on, or the rules they had on the introduction of electric cars. They're giving car makers longer to do this without being fined. So, you know, the government can be flexible. And I think this is a win-win for them in terms of jobs, energy security, a balance of payments, and lower carbon. It's much better to produce your own oil and gas than shipping stuff from Qatar or wherever,
yeah,
in terms of carbon. So I think change on that would make a huge difference. Mm. In the meantime, you know, it's going to be one of these that trades up and down. And I'm not surprised, like it's been hit over the last week or so.
Yeah. Is it in merger talks with EnQuest as well?
Yes, yes. We have to wait and see. I think that would make sense. I think, you know, any mergers in the North Sea to make sort of bigger operators. And I think, you know, that would also, you know, bring some tax losses with it as well.
Yeah.
So it's just about getting some efficiency in the North Sea.
Yeah. No, I like it. I think it's a good play. Good idea, that one. Okay, we've got a question from John beforehand. He's asking about Premier Foods. So yeah. John asking John a question on Premier Foods. This is basically the maker of sort of cakes, Mr. Kipling, and Ambrosia Custard and all this. Yeah. Went through, historically, it's had a lot of debt. It's got a pension deficit, but I think it's all cleaned up its balance sheet now. What's your latest view?
Okay. This has held up very well, not surprisingly, I guess, you know, good defensive stock. I think maybe we'll buy more Mr. Kipling cakes.
Yeah.
comfort food. Yeah. But my view on this one is it's fantastic management. The chairman, ex-Reckitt Benckiser, during its real growth time, is real proper businessmen who understand shareholder value and building shareholder value. The CEO is excellent. They've, as you say, cleaned up the balance sheet. The pension deficit is not a problem any longer. In fact, they're getting significant cash flow benefits now from that. They used to have to be topping up the pension fund every year, etc. Now they're not. And so that's improved cash flow. They've made good acquisitions over the last few years, ones that have, you know, they've paid a good price for them and then integrated them into the business and, you know, got very good returns on them. And I see that continuing as well, being part of the story. So, you know, taking those three things, good management, a good strategy in terms of how to grow the business, you know, to grow the top line and improve margins, you know, and a good cash flow sort of background to it, good balance sheet. So I think this can go further. And I think we've got news coming up fairly soon on that. So that's one I'm not selling, although it has held up, you know, it's because I have a decent amount. I have more conviction to the mystery stock that I sold this morning.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, my wife actually eats industrial quantities of cherry Bakewells from Mr. Kipling. She loves them. So I think she'll single-handedly keep the profits moving. But more broadly, I know 2 or 3 weeks ago, Asda indicated that it was going to set off a supermarket price war, less power than it previously had. But how do you see that and the potential of consumer down trading to sort of like, you know, own brand cakes rather than going for the same Mr. Kipling or the Ambrosia custard?
I suppose that's always a risk, and it's up to I think they're quite adept on the marketing front. And again, I think if you remember back, with Reckitt Benckiser, and a lot of that story was about sort of expanding a brand, sort of moving it, taking a brand name and moving it sort of slightly sideways into newer products and things. So I think Premier Foods, they'll be under pressure like anyone else on that that front from the people they supply. But I think they're quite adept at on the marketing front in terms of offers, etc., and things. So I'm not too concerned about that, especially relative to other parts of the market. Also, they do supply a lot of, if you look at local shops, smaller shops, etc., you'll always see Mr. Kipling on the shelves there, where they don't have the pricing sort of power against
them. My wife has tried the Dio, the supermarket brands of Cherry Bakewells, and they're horrible. So she's definitely staying with Mr. Kipling, which is excellent for you. We'll start with the consumer front. We've got a question from Tony. He's asking about Mie Group, which is basically it used to do the old photo booths. It still does, but has also added on sort of like washing machines, and I think it's got key cutting as well onto its portfolio.
That's coming.
Again, a very value play. I guess the big question on this one is, where's the growth coming from, given the digital move to photographs and passport photographs rather than sort of photo booths and stuff?
Yeah, well, I think the thing with just on that particular point, what you are seeing is I tried taking my own photo for a passport in the UK. I think I got away with it actually a few years back, new passport, etc. But a lot of countries like Japan, where Mie Group are quite big, and also I think in the EU, etc., they're becoming much stricter about the quality of the photo, but also the security around it. And Mie Group have built this into their machines. So I think we're getting to a stage where actually someone just standing against a white wall at home and taking a picture of themselves, it's not going to be acceptable. So regulation, basically, I think, is protecting them on that front. PhotoMe, to a great extent, is a big sort of cash flow generator for them. It's not the mad growth area. I mean, it did well after COVID, where people were rushing to travel again and renewing their passports around the world. But generally, I think it's just very good on the cash flow front. And that's supplying cash flow for them to build other parts of the business. So the wash.me is really growing very rapidly. It's the fastest growing part. They're very good machines that they're basing in anywhere. I mean, they've got a thing with Morrisons. So you could turn up at Morrison's, do your shopping, and your washing's done in one of the machines. It's not like an old-fashioned laundrette. I think the machines are just far better, and they don't need much maintenance in terms of, people going along and sorting them out. So the returns on those machines are incredible. I mean, they pay for themselves in a few years.
Is this a run the winners? I mean, I was just looking at that chart. That's a fabulous chart. And it still only trades on a modest 11 times PE and it's got cash on the balance sheet.
Yeah, well, it's also the cash flow. As you say, 11 times PE. I mean, I keep thinking it should be on 16, 17, 18 times, given the growth. It's struggling to get re-rated in terms of the valuation. But the earnings keep coming through. The cash flow keeps coming through. For me, it's a good long-term holding. It's one I feel very comfortable with.
Yeah, good. Okay, let's stay on that same theme of cash flow generating consumers. We've got PayPoint. Now, I know actually the boys from Harwood like this one as well. It basically puts the those old sort of standalone ATM machines into convenience stores that allows people to pay their bills and stuff. I think it's got a retail outlets Loves Shop or something like that, I think. Yeah. Anyway, can you take us through the investment thesis on PayPoint?
Okay, again, this isn't, it's not a rapid growth stock, this one. And I mean, this is very much a value position for me. We use them all the time. You know, when you take your a parcel that needs to be sent back to, you know, something you've bought and too big or too small or whatever, and you send them back, you know, generally you're going off to your local store down the road and it will be a pay point machine that does all that work. So, or people will be paying their electricity bill or their utility bill. So there's many, many ways that those machines at your convenience store are used, and they're just taking it. They get paid a small amount each time for that use. So for me, it's just good, steady cash flow, small top line growth. Again, I think there's pretty good management there who are being, you know, I think they're being as innovative as they can in terms of getting new customers to use the sort of pay point network. And, you know, the more they can get through basically what is pretty much a fixed cost, it sort of tends to drop to the bottom line. So the cash flow is good, and it's on a cheap rating. And they've got, I can't remember the exact figures now, but he's got some quite, you know, they came up with them a couple of years ago in terms of targets for the business over the next 3 years. And each time the results come out, they're sort of on the track to hit that target. And they're buying back shares. I'm about four or five of my companies are buying back shares of my positions at the moment, which I like, you know.
How much of their profits is dependent on the ATMs, that sort of like, you know, the payment mechanism? Because obviously we're moving all mostly onto online. You see that closing bank branches, and you also see them taking out ATMs from, you know, basically the
The actual ATMs are a very small part of the business.
Yeah, okay.
It's much more the bill payment side, parcels, that all that side of the business that's big. And then, as you say, you know, the love to shop thing, which, you know, when they bought that, I wasn't quite sure about it, but actually in terms of the returns they seem to be getting, it's good. I think it was a good acquisition.
Yeah,
and you see, and that is playing much more to the digital sort of world as well.
Yeah. Good. Okay, let's finish off on the consumer. We've got Deborah asking about Bloomsbury Publishing, and I guess Bloomsbury is the owner of sort of the old Harry Potter series, J.K. Rowling, but also has got another one, Sarah J. Maas, I believe.
Yeah, Romanticy.
Yeah, Romanticy. And also,
I've not actually read one of her books. Oh, okay. I'm not sure it's my genre. But, okay.
And also, I think they also bought some academic publishing arm in the States as well, just recently, so that increased their diversity. Yes. How do you see this one going forward?
I love it. I mean, Nigel Newton, basically the founder of the company, I just think, you know, he keeps going. If he wanted to sell this business, he could sell it tomorrow, but he doesn't look like he's anywhere near that stage. He clearly enjoys running the business. Now, they seem to have, on the consumer front, a knack of finding fantastic authors. So, of course, J.K. Rowling, and that was amazing, and that's what made the company. Yeah. But then Sarah J. Maas, and you see, to the extent with Sarah J. Maas, for the year that ended February 2024, they had a fantastic year, and they warned then that the year to February 2025 wouldn't be as good because there were no releases of a new Sarah J. Maas over the 12 months. And I think earnings forecasts were for a 20% drop in earnings. But, you know, and the market sort of took that pretty much in its, you know,
in its stride. Yeah.
But what you've seen over the last year, obviously that purchase of in the US of the academic publisher, and all to add to its existing academic offering, which is pretty good, and the whole story on the academic side of where they're sort of moving it digitally, so that people can access it, etc., online and through subscriptions, which is improving margins and growth in the business. So you've got that going well. But the two of those together means that each time throughout the year, you've had upgrades whenever they've updated. And now I think forecasts are that for the year that just finished, end of February, that earnings will drop 7 or 8%. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the results because I'll be interested to see what actually happens. And I wouldn't mind betting that, you know, they're only down a few percent.
Yeah.
And then we can look to next year where, you know, Sarah J. Mac. So that's something where, you know, that's just a timing issue. Mm. Over the next few years, what do I expect? Consumer to continue to grow well, but the academic side to see further growth and good margin growth.
Mm. And do you think people, because obviously there's been a shift to audible books away yeah. from physical ones, but do you think that will still be hardcore in terms of the, you know, sort of sales of soft and hardback?
Well, I think the thing with Bloomsbury is, I mean, it did get hit hard. I mean, look, it had a great run up to sort of 2005, 2006 mm. time. There was then real fears about, well, you had a bit of an end of the sort of Harry Potter effect.
Yeah.
But also you then had the worry about everyone's going to read their books on a Kindle. No one's mm. ever going to buy a book again. Bookstores are finished. Physical books are finished, etc. But I think what you are seeing, it's a bit like vinyl records. I know, actually, it's probably not a bit like vinyl records because people talk about the growth, but that's from a very, very low base. And,
yeah.
You know, it's, but with books, people are buying more books again. You know, Waterstones are doing very well. People are getting, they want to think. I mean, I tend to, I'm in a book club. I do both. I buy the book and I also have it on Audible.
Yeah, okay.
And I go for a walk and I might listen to the book, then I come back and then I'll read it, you know, on the physical. So I'll jump around anyway.
Good. Okay, let's switch sectors. We've got a couple of spread bettors you quite like. We've got Plus 500 and yeah. IG Index. Now, these guys do, everybody knows, they do spread betting and CFDs and a bunch yeah. of other sort of financial products. They allow traders to basically leverage up their positions. Their traders and the customers are going to be struggling, but that extra volatility and activity is probably going to be jump-starting their profits as long as they don't have any major sort of like, you know, client defaults. Let's start with perhaps the more racy of the two. Let's go to Plus 500 because we rarely cover it. What's your sort of view on this one?
You said it allows traders. I was going to say it allows traders to lose their money.
Anyway, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I don't spread bet.
Yeah, no, nor do I.
Because I learned.
Oh, did you? You used to.
I used to a long time ago, and I just said, I'm useless at it.
Yeah.
And the whole thing's designed to make you trade because the lights are flashing red and whatever. And it's just I don't, and I haven't for a very long time. But it's quite nice being on the other side of it.
Yeah.
That's yes. how they make their money. I mean, what I like about both of them, and I'll go into Plus 500, is basically cash flow is superb because. Mm. Sadly, let's say a lot of people are losing money, but even the ones who are making them, they're making money on the, you know, on the margin, on the trade gap. Plus 500 is the newest of my stocks in the portfolio. I've held IG a long time. Mm. Plus 500, I should have held a long time. I did buy it a few years back, and they had a bit of a run in. Mm. I bought it back in 2014, so not long after it.
Yeah,
not long after it. I've got the trade here, and I sold it not very long later for a small profit. But the reason I sold it was they had a run in with the regulator then,
yeah.
And it was about sort of. I think knowing their clients,
yes.
money laundering fears, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember at the time taking the view that that's not good. And actually, these are the sort of things that can destroy a company.
Mm.
So I got out. As I say, I got out at a small profit. fair credit to them. They presumably satisfied the regulators.
Yeah. So it basically 10 bagged afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was four.
I've done that. Don't worry.
It was £4.70.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So six bagged.
Yeah. And you've had great dividends along the way.
Mm.
Anyway, I've got back into it because, again, it's the cash flow, the dividends they're paying. And, you know, I think in the long run, this will continue to do well. I mean, it will be volatile, but I think at the moment it will be making loads of money.
Yeah,
these are ideal markets for them. People cutting, buying, trading like mad.
Yeah. Let's move to what's really weird is that, you know, given that they benefit from volatility and sort of like anguish from investors, and then you just say they should be doing, the shares go down regardless. I mean, it just seems totally counterintuitive. And if you were interested in buying in spread bettors, this is the time to do it.
Well, look, you put the IG share price chart up there. They'll be doing very, I mean, their latest update was fantastic.
Yeah.
So you got earnings upgrades there.
Mm.
They're generating loads of cash.
Yeah.
They're increasing their share buyback. So, I mean, you see that chart. So 882, well, they'll be buying some shares back today. So that's great. It's good for me as a shareholder. I now have a bigger exposure to IG than I did on Friday night as they buy back shares and reduce the number of shares.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's. Did I say earlier on that I might be buying some shares? I mean, that's the sort of one I'll be looking at.
Yeah.
What's the yield? 5% yield, buying back shares, PE of 10.
Yeah. Good. Okay, let's move to M&A. We've got NIOX, which is an asthma diagnostics company that used to be Circassia. And Christopher Mills of Harwood Capital has been all over this for 3-5 years. The shares have done very well under the CEO or the exec chairman, Ian Johnson, and they've sorted out the balance sheet and invested and got growth, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they got a private equity bid. How do you see this one going forward? It's been a brilliant performer for you.
It's been very good. I got into it, I guess, 2 or 3 years ago. And again, good cash flow business. And cleaned up, as you say, by Ian Johnson. And it's not the first time he's cleaned up a company like this. And the end game always was that it would be bought. Yeah. I wasn't necessarily certain it would be bought by a private equity buyer. I thought it would make more sense for an industry buyer, because, you know, for a who could just add this to their portfolio. And another
it is an industry buyer, really, because it's a private equity healthcare roll-up. Right. It's a roll-up.
Okay. Yeah. So, and the other thing they did say was that there were others who were maybe interested, I think. Mm. So, I mean, I think this should play out. I mean, when the announcement came, it's 81p, isn't it, they've talked about. I mean, who knows, with the market doing what it's done in the last few days, maybe the 81p will be what it goes for. But certainly when it was announced, I thought you would get more than 81p and that there might be interest from other players.
Yeah.
And the share price was only about, 73p then. So I sort of thought, well, you know, I'd buy it. It's 67.7 today.
Mm.
Would a private equity buyer walk away because the market's wobbling a bit?
No.
Probably not.
No, I think this one's a done deal. There's an arbitrage opportunity as long as you're prepared to, you know, take a bit of risk.
Well, you know, you're going to take a bit of risk. Okay, so let's say we're being too optimistic.
Mm.
It's an arbitrage. We're being too optimistic, and actually they just walk away.
Yeah.
But 67p, I'd probably be a buyer anyway.
Okay.
You know, just to hold the business over the next year, 2 years.
Yeah. It's on this current price, it's on about 22 times PE. So 16 to 17 times EBITDA.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think the cash flow is the main thing to focus on, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's keep in that healthcare sector. We've got one which we've never covered before. It's a US stock, Halozyme Therapeutics, which I believe has got an innovative technology that allows
companies to sell their drugs for self-injection for patients to have them at home and to inject themselves sort of like in the stomach or in the thigh.
That's right. Rather than the delivery of drugs, you know, standard drugs. So it's the delivery system. Now, why I like this, although it might be in the biotech sort of thing or whatever, and people might worry about, the point is it's proven.
Yeah.
The turnover's growing rapidly. Profits are growing rapidly. The cash flow is growing rapidly. And I mean, this came to my attention. I'll be brutally honest about it. Someone I follow on X.
Okay.
On Twitter. And, you know, so what's he call himself? Loxley Capital or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a sensible guy. X City. And, you know, he published his top 10. And so I'm not averse to looking at things and thinking, all right, well, why? So I had a look, and that was the one that really jumped out at me. And it was mainly because of the price to cash flow.
Yeah.
They then came up with results. Well, certainly a trading update first and then confirmed with the results. And they their guidance for the current year showed really strong growth coming through, and even at the bottom end of their guidance, the growth was strong and the valuation looked tremendous, and they're buying back shares.
Yeah, it looks at 13.5x PE, and what's their EPS growing at? It's sort of mid-teens, is it?
Well, at the top end of their guidance, it's way more than that. You know, you're into the 20s. Bottom end of your guidance, it's mid-teens.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's a great company. I think, you know, because obviously this delivery mechanism is largely for, you know, biologics type drugs, like, you know, or immunotherapy that has a short shelf life and needs, and rather than actually going to a hospital to get injected with it, just to have a drip, you can get it gets delivered to your door and you just chuck it in yourself, you know. So that makes a lot of sense to me. No, really, I think it's an excellent company that investors should really have a good look at. Really good.
Yeah, and you see, I mean, what's the value? The market cap, $7.4 billion dollars.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the sort of stock where, if in 3-4 years' time it had doubled, would I be surprised? No.
Yeah.
It's the only U.S. stock I hold at the moment.
Mm. Well, it does make from looking at the estimates, 58% EBIT margins. It's a licensing model, 58%.
Yeah, but you've got to have the growth, haven't you? Because one of my old stocks that I held it was my longest held stock.
Bioventix.
Yeah, and I sold that last year.
Yeah. Oh, well done.
My main worry was portfolio, show current holdings.
It was good timing that, because I know the shares have dropped quite heavily, haven't they?
Right. So I sold it on the 4th of November at £37.
Mm.
And my concern then was, although it's the most wonderful company in terms of, you know, all its financial characteristics, the gross margin, the net margin, the return on capital, etc., etc., the top line had just stopped growing.
Mm.
And, you know, and therefore the dividend had stopped growing. And actually, we just had the results the other day and the dividend was down. Having said that, I now look at it and I go 15x PE, 6.6% dividend yield. Nah, you know, I it's on the watch list.
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised. Yeah,
if they do have success on the Alzheimer's front, then that could be huge.
Yeah, you're right.
And I don't hold it, and I'm not saying I'm buying it.
Yeah,
it's not on my list for this afternoon, is what I mean.
Yeah, good. Okay, we got let's move to the B2B services area. We've got Brendan, he's asking about Renew Holdings, which does sort of like maintenance services, engineering services in the nuclear, in the rail, in the water sector.
Yeah.
It used to be an absolute star, but because they had a soft profit warning because of the rail sector delays, the CP7, the shares have
nudged, well, come down quite a lot, actually. What's your latest on this one? Renew Holdings, really good long-term track record.
Yeah. Okay, this is quite an interesting one because I did have a stop loss on this. So I got taken out on the day of the profit warning.
Oh, wow.
I got taken out of it at £7.65 on the day of that profit warning. Yeah. But I then bought it back that afternoon.
Okay.
10% lower. So at least it worked. But I'm back in there. Now, my thing is, look, I think Renew's, again, very well managed company. It's rail is the big part.
Yeah.
And basically, they work under these frameworks.
Yeah.
So you have a landslide onto a thing. Renew probably get called to sort out the rail. The famous one was probably 7 or 8 years ago on that rail line that goes down to Cornwall.
Yeah, I know the one. Yeah, I went on that one. It's frightening. Yeah.
And it collapsed into the sea. Yeah. Renew there, they rebuild it. So those are sort of emergency things. But they also have, you know, maintenance that has to be done. You know, tunnel needs maintaining and things like that. And they're all done under these frameworks. And basically the shock or the warning that came back in January was that the latest rail framework, where, you know, over the 5-year period or that this amount will be spent, they've basically been slow. The people with their hands on the purse strings have been slow at releasing them. But I take a view that with this sort of thing, this maintenance has to be done. You can't just stop doing it to save money. And that it will come through. And that was their sort of view. Now, they updated the other day saying that they were still happy with it. I think it's October year end, isn't it, Renew?
I don't know.
It's September or October.
Yeah.
But they came through saying that they were still happy, basically, with that statement they'd made in January. So clearly things haven't got worse. It didn't sound like it had got a lot better, but they were still happy with that statement. So there may be a slight risk that, you know, if things don't pick up in the next 4 or 5 months, they come back and say, oh, it's still been a bit slow. So that is your risk. But I think down at this sort of valuation, you're 9.7 times.
Yeah.
The yield's up to 3. I mean, the yield's been below 2.
Yeah.
I'm prepared to stick with this one. I mean, I first bought it back in 2014 again at 270p. I had a bit of time out of it, then got back in. But
Is it going to get hit at all? Because obviously, unfortunately, over the weekend, the government, for all its sort of talk, has obviously pushed up NI, employers' NI, and the minimum wage. And these guys must employ. I mean, I know they're regulated and therefore they're decent salaried people, but frankly, they've got thousands of people under their wing, I guess, employed to sort out all the maintenance, the ongoing. Have they got the ability to pass on these extra costs?
They will get hit like any other company with things. I guess the sort of benefit for them isn't they've got lots and lots of very low paid people where it's all, you know, drop down to the level. So I think in terms of the hit compared to maybe a more, a sort of industry in the sort of consumer service area, pubs, restaurants, things like that, it won't get hit as hard. It's something, you know, they've talked about and basically said it's fine. They can absorb it within the cost structure, etc. So I'm more concerned about basically the spending coming back. The other thing they did say, though, in the latest update was that other parts of the business other than rail were stronger than they'd expected. So maybe that's helping.
Yeah. I know water's definitely strong at the moment. All the utilities have been
CapEx.
All the utilities have been forced to clean up their sewage, which they chuck into the sea of reservoirs. Okay, we've got another question from Fiona. She's asking about Zegona Communications, which, frankly, I hardly ever touch. It basically, I believe it's a company that bought the Vodafone Spain franchise, and Vodafone's still a big shareholder. And they've been turning it around. The track record, I think the management team at Liberty Media, very good track record. I was just looking at the share chart. It's brilliant, but it's dropped 15% today.
Yeah. Okay. That's an interesting one, isn't it? Yeah. So this is a bit of a sort of financial engineering story.
Yeah.
In terms of releasing value. Mm. So as you rightly point out, I think it's very good experienced management team.
Yeah.
Vodafone wanted to get out of Spain. Mm. So they basically bought Vodafone's business there, which was basically a mobile business, but also a broadband business, mm. you know, broadband to the home, fiber to the home. And, but part of, to put it simply, the way that was structured was that, you know, Vodafone in effect financed some of that purchase through some basically debt, which Zegona is paying them interest on. But the plan is that it merges its business with the other big players in Spain, Telefonica and Orange, or Mass Orange.
Yeah.
And I think that when that happens, Zegona will have about 30-odd% of the, you know, the joint venture.
Yeah.
Their plan is that they would then reduce that to 10%. Mm. And they reduce it to 10% by selling the 20% to a private equity. Right. And this isn't uncommon. The private equity has been involved in Spain, in the telecoms area. So Zegona would then have a huge chunk of cash. Mm. They will then use that cash to pay Vodafone's debt.
Right.
Get rid of Vodafone. So Vodafone will be happy. It's all worked nicely for them. Vodafone will be off Zegona's back. My shareholding will increase as a percentage in Zegona because it's convertible debt. And also, you'd be expecting something like a £1.50 special dividend.
So putting all that together, what, you know, you get your £1.50 special dividend and you get your re-rating and you sell out. What value did you put on the shares compared to £5.50 currently?
Well, I was looking for £9.
Okay, right.
I've seen lots of notes.
Yeah.
Where there's talking £11-12 targets.
Wow. Okay.
But, you know, but it is dependent on them doing this deal.
Yeah.
And also, there's a sweet spot for them doing the deal, because, you know, the longer it goes on, then more the debt rolls, you know, the interest rolls up that they would have to pay Vodafone.
Yeah. Okay.
And also, does dislocation in market at the moment mean they don't get quite as much for their 20% stake and things? So those are the sort of risks around it.
Yeah. Well, good special situation. Thanks for that. Cracker. Yeah. Okay.
Look, I bought the 2% holding back, you know, in January. And it.
Well, you bought 2% of Gap of Zegona, did you?
No, just a 2% position.
I was just thinking. I wish. You've definitely been filling your boots if you bought 2%. Yeah. Okay, we got Vincent. He's asking about Gamma Communications. He says the PE is around 13, 14. He reckons it's great potential in their Germany business. I think did they just buy somebody out there for a big chunk of money?
Yeah, they did. Last year they've been built, but they've had a business there for some time. Yeah. So they're just building it, growing it there. I think they see the potential in Europe as a whole as well to grow their business. Again, you know, this is one actually, which if you look at the chart, it was
trading at 16.
So I drew one of those. Do you know Stan Weinstein? His book. here we are, Stan Weinstein's.
Oh, okay, right, yeah, well-known man, yeah.
There we are. Quite a good book, actually. You always get these and things. So if you can take that chart back, actually, a longer term chart, like a 5-year chart, can you do that?
Yeah.
Okay. So what he loves is drawing rectangles. So he drew a rectangle from about, I guess, April 2022.
Yeah.
Through to sort of October or end of 2024.
Yeah, okay.
But you could just see it traded in this area. And this got up to a huge valuation back in the, you know, during the teens and in 21. And I remember a friend asked me about it. He had shares in it. Why don't you buy that? And I just went, well, it's on a P of 25 or 6 or so. I said, I can't buy that. It just it looks great company, but it's too high. Anyway, it's one where it got derated. It then went through this sort of rectangle time where there was clearly a ceiling where people sold and things. And then I was watching it, and beginning of last year, it sort of broke out. And I bought it. So I bought it at £12.34.
Okay.
On the 15th of February 24. And that looked really quite good, didn't it, up until about October.
Yeah.
And since then, it's been derated. Now, there's two things going on. And I think this is probably the biggest thing. It's a technical move. They're moving to the FTSE 250.
Right.
I think this quarter, end of June.
May,
June, yeah.
Yeah.
And I have basically read things saying that they reckon there's around 14% held in IHT funds.
Right.
This is very popular with IHT funds.
Yeah, of course it would be.
Yeah. So these, you know, there's this sort of indigestion going on as you've got these sellers getting out. And look, if they've held them in an IHT fund, you know, since 2014, they're still up five times.
Yeah.
If you look at the long chart. So, you know, and they'll be getting out.
Yeah.
And so now Gamma is trying to mitigate this a bit with share buybacks because, again, very strong cash flow, decent balance sheet, and they're buying back shares. So it's not one I'm going to sell. You see, this is where, when we talk about stop losses, for me, I feel that I know the company well, I like the characteristics of it, and I think I understand why it's coming down.
Yeah. So they, I mean, they're basically, they're an outsourced contact center for large companies. And obviously with Gen AI, that's stripping out a lot of, you know, call centers and stuff like that, paid call center staff. Is that going to impact their model? Because you get some companies who are taking literally thousands of people out.
Of that, I mean, it could do. It's a risk.
Yeah.
And I guess you've got to keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
But I think there's more to the business than just that, than just the call center stuff. I mean, it is a lot of it's about digitalization of, you know, all communications, et cetera. Yeah.
Within okay.
And, you know, maybe they'll go to people and they'll be able to add that as a part of the cost saving. You'll still need the infrastructure, you know, the digital infrastructure.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, we touched on Polar Capital. Let's go to Pollen Street, basically a private equity investor and also private credit investor. In fact, they took out one of my companies. I didn't invest in, but I was following them, Proactis, in 2021, because did payments and stuff like that. Yep. So they do roll-ups. The shares have done well, but obviously they're getting absolutely annihilated, not annihilated, but they're getting hit like all the asset managers as recently.
Absolutely. So I wonder whether this is moving on to my, it's not far off my bonkers value.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good.
Remember where the P yield's higher than the PE.
Yeah.
According to this, and it won't take into account, I don't think, today's fall. I think probably on forecast, it's probably bonkers now. So the yield's around 8%.
Yeah, 8.3 I've got.
Yeah. And the P is around, what have you got for the P?
8.6.
Yeah, so we're nearly there. You know, we probably are with today's move. Yeah. And and they're buying back shares because the cash flow is good. So this is all about, it's basically a management company now, Pollen Street. Mm. It used to be a fund, but they changed a year ago the structure so that Pollen Street is now a management company that manages these private equity funds. The holding company is flush with cash. So when it's launching a new private equity fund, it co-invests with new investors.
Right.
So they may say, you know, we want to raise a 500 million sterling fund.
Yeah.
We will put 50 million of our own in start with. And then Paul Hill says, "Rare, well, I'll put 20 million in." You know, that's the sort of thing that happens.
Yeah.
And so they have an exposure to that. Then with the excess cash they've got as well, they're able to buy back some shares and also to have a pretty good dividend policy in terms of what they pay out, in terms of their cash flow, in terms of dividends. They have a forecast or a target of getting to $10 billion under management over the next few years.
Is that about double where it currently lies?
It is about. I mean, they're over five now. So, yeah, which will just be fantastic cash flow continuing to come through, pay the dividends, buy back shares. When I bought this stock, I sort of likened it to Intermediate Capital.
Yeah, okay.
If you draw a chart of Intermediate Capital that's been tremendous and go back.
Yeah.
This is what Intermediate's one I did hold in the past. Yeah. Another one I should probably have never sold, but you know, because it's really, really well managed quality company. But Intermediate, here we are. If you go back with Intermediate to the beginning of the 2001 or two, that sort of time.
Yeah.
It had the same market cap as Pollen Street. It managed the same amount of money, etc.
Yeah.
And the founder and owner of Pollen Street, she owns, I can't remember now, but it is around 30% from memory. And I think she's very driven, got a good team around her. So, again, for me, this is a good long-term holding.
Yeah. I think actually what will happen is there's a lot of flush private equity groups, they like Pollen Street, it will be just, if prices of small caps stay where they are, they'll just be absolutely licking their lips and snapping up the shed load. They'll be doing what they did in the bottom of the pandemic.
Yeah. I mean, one of the companies they bought, probably a year or so ago, Mattioli Woods.
Oh, did they? Okay.
Yeah. One of their funds bought that.
Yeah. Doesn't surprise me. Okay, good. We've got a final question from Ian. He's asking about XPS Pensions, which has been a fabulous winner long-term, largely on the back of its advisory of all things regulation to define benefits. And I think they're a bit of a challenger to the likes of Tower Watson and Mercia, but they've keep winning mandates. And obviously, there's been so much changes in defined benefits with the increase in interest. Anyway, how do you see this one? Been a winner. Is this a hold your winner or is it take profits?
For me, it's hold.
Hold
your winner. And again, I'm watching it, the chart. I just think, look, it's one of the higher PEs for me.
Yeah.
You know, if you look down the list of things that I hold, but I just think there's great momentum in the business. Earnings tend to be upgraded. I think they're good at, and I just think they're in a good position.
Yeah.
In terms of, the natural, I think, growth in their industry.
Mm.
So, you know, I think there's good growth in the industry. I think there's going to be a lot of change, you know, with interest rates having changed how they have. And, we've had 20 years of very low bond yields, everyone flooding into, you know, bonds, gilts, etc. That didn't look so clever from sort of 2022 onwards. Equity exposure is very low, certainly UK. When I used to manage pension funds back in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, we had 60% of pension fund money in UK equities.
And what's it now for the industry?
About 3 or 4. That, the actual amazing thing is how well the UK equity market has done over the last 20 years, given the amount of selling from UK-based investors.
Yeah, it's all been that liability-driven management, isn't it? It's basically, if you've got a long-term liability, you match it with a long-term asset bond.
Yeah, Well, and also it led to the death of, final salary pension schemes.
Yeah. Not in the government, it doesn't. Public sector.
No, they're fine.
I know. Okay, I've got a really tough final question that I ask all our experts. Basically, what's your favourite sort of stock, and this is underlined, idea for the rest of the year or for, a longer term? What's something which really gets the rosier sort of blood sort of excited? Difficult question, I know.
Of all of these, God, just one stock.
If you could only buy one stock, John, what would it be?
This is a difficult question because I'm trying. There's so many here.
Yeah.
For 1 year.
Oh, well, 2 years, 3 years. It's just one you
think. 3 years.
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah.
Halozyme.
Okay.
IG. You see, I'm not playing your game.
Okay, all right.
You got donor.
Yeah, okay, yeah, cool. All right, so there's three. You've got basically Halozyme, IG, and Zegona.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks very much, John. Excellent insights, and very much look. And thanks, everyone, for your questions. Very much look forward in touching base in 6 months' time. So best of luck with all the investing.
All right. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.